Yeah, you got to have a permit to burn it, too. Yeah. You have to have a permit to burn it. Sure. And there's an Ohio statute that says it's illegal. It's a Class 2 misdemeanor or something.
Burn it.
We got a couple of delegates that would like an escort to get around, right, to get into the convention center.
Pushing everybody that way, please. Would you please walk west? Everyone, please go west towards the Jack Casino. Clear the sidewalk. Keep moving. We need you to move west towards the Jack Casino. Everything is over.
You won't get away from God. You're going to stand before him someday, each one of us. You won't have your badge with you. You aren't going to have your camera with you.
Okay, some sounds from outside the arena last night, but what about inside? How will history view this week so far? Well, one historian is already thinking about that, Harvard historian Jill Lepore, staff writer for The New Yorker. She's here. Hi, Jill.
Hey, Robin.
Sitting right there. So far, as we said, I mean, there might be more protests tonight, but so far, much more police and military presence and journalists, you know, surrounding maybe one or two people carrying an assault rifle in an open gun state. It's almost comical. Pretty tame. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's actually, there have been times when I've been out there sort of counting, it's a ratio of journalists to protesters is 10 to 1, which is, you know, an incredible relief for people. And there's been, though, I think a kind of really interesting set of spontaneous moments. I mean, maybe they're a little bit staged, but on my way over here this morning, I crossed through Public Square into this beautiful plaza where many of the protesters have been gathering.
Which, by the way, I want to say this, they have been speaking out there. There's a speaker's thing.
There's a sound stage,
But there wasn't one back in the 1700s. The public square was there. But
yeah,
continue.
It was the public square. Yeah. And it's been this very exciting place for free speech because it hasn't resulted in violence. And this morning when I was walking across that stop for a cup of coffee, they have a ping pong table out there. And there was a ping pong contest between the Indiana State Troopers and this bunch of, like, young black men. And there was this crowd.
How great.
You know, there are these lovely moments in a week that's been not the loveliest.
Well, we can talk about that inside the arena. Chris Christie, for instance, putting Hillary Clinton on trial, the crowd chanting. Here's South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Henry McMaster. He delivered the second nominating speech for Donald Trump.
Today, the current administration has abandoned what little confidence they ever had in our Constitution and our country, and the world has lost confidence in us. The inevitable consequence? Weakness, decline, and ultimately, chaos and oblivion.
Yikes. Jill Lepore.
Yeah, I mean, each speech is like one Armageddon after the next. And there's this incredible sense of foreboding. And people came here to Cleveland after weeks of really very agonizing national and international news. I think kind of battered, really deeply concerned, saddened by what was going on in the country and around the world. And the greeting from the podium, this isn't from the floor with the delegates, but the speeches really, they're not that different from the guys marching down the street with the signs that read, repent, repent. I mean, there's just this sense of the coming catastrophe. And it's a strange choice of a political narrative. It's always been the case that conservatism is sort of backward-looking, right? The golden age lies in the past. And so returning to the greatness that America once was,
a lot of people genuinely feel.
Yeah, and that's not a novel thing. But this is different than that. It's making that argument contingent on accepting the idea that the present is catastrophic.
Well, compare it, for instance, to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, so Ronald Reagan had incredible, you know, he really packaged a kind of nostalgia for the era in which he was a movie star, right? I mean, he's actually repackaging himself, looking back at that sort of 40s Reagan, that young, beautiful, handsome man. But he is nevertheless hoping to usher in a new day, a new beginning, morning in America. I mean, so much of his political rhetoric was forward-looking. So there was a hinge between the past was great, but the future is going to be even better. Yeah. And somehow the Trump campaign, the messaging coming off of that campaign, it has not yet made that turn. And this kind of feeling of kind of sourness is kind of and grimness pervades the place. It's a tough sell for young people. I've been really struck. I spend most of my time in the public square because it's beautiful. It's an incredibly beautiful park. Mm. Talking, especially to younger people who are there. And as you say, not so much in big groups, but singly or in twos. You know, a couple University of Cincinnati students I sat down with yesterday. And they're not that, you know, they're really concerned about things going on in the world. They're not happy with either of the major party candidates. I across the spectrum, I haven't found young people who are excited about either of the major party candidates.
They're not being offered hope. Jilapur, one quick thing. You noticed something about the archivist here, just very briefly.
Yeah, I stopped at the Historical Society, and I said, what are you guys collecting? They have this incredible memorabilia from 1924 and 1936, the last two conventions. I was like, you know, they have these ponchos. And they're like, we don't know what to collect. There are no paper tickets this time around.
Everything's digital. You know what they were also saying? That's Jilapur, Harvard historian, Jilapur staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks as always.
Oh, thank you.